is Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday, the 24th of April, back in Milwaukee after a trip to our Eau Claire studios for yesterday's show and a listener dinner in Hudson, Wisconsin, where there was a huge snowstorm. It was great to meet all of you in that part of the state, and thanks for the hospitality from our Eau Claire office. Good people, good listeners, a good time all around, except for snow in April. This hour of the program, we're going to be talking about standardized tests, and our guest has written this. Standardized testing has facilitated an incredibly toxic environment in our schools and in our discourse about education, ultimately turning schools from learning centers to testing factories. There is a relatively small but growing opt-out movement of standardized testing in various states in this country, and I think it'll be an extremely informative and interesting hour. I'm sure that people have differing points of view on whether or not standardized testing, whether it's a good policy because it helps us realize where we are in the world and where we are among various districts, or whether or not there is way too much time spent teaching to the test. Our guest is Professor James Curlow. He's an education professor at Southeastern Louisiana University and was an elementary school teacher for 18 years. We'll be welcoming phone calls for Professor Curlow, our number for you to join us. We're back in Milwaukee, so it's 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Our email, if you'd like to send a message that way, is talk@wpr.org, and our Facebook page, leave your messages there, too. They're always so interesting to read, is the Kathleen Dunn Show. Professor James Curlow, hello. Thank you very much for being with us.
It's good to be with you. I appreciate the invitation. As a matter of fact, if I may say, is I have a great affinity to Wisconsin. Last year, I spoke at a conference there. Plus, I have a brother and sister that are graduates of Marquette, and a sister that still lives there. And lastly, just a little anecdotal here is I'm not originally from Louisiana. I'm originally from Europe. And the first time I came to the United States, I visited Wisconsin, and it was there that I actually saw Neil Armstrong walk on the moon. And don't forget Wisconsin on that alone as well. So it's good to be with you.
Thank you. Where are you from in Europe?
I was born and raised in Italy. And then all the way until I graduated from high school.
All right. Well, we may be able to do some international comparisons then during the course of the hour. Professor Curlow, tell me about this opt-out movement. I read some things about where it is. Is it a growing movement, opting out of standardized testing?
Well, I think, obviously, there's a big context related to standardized tests, and hopefully that I can get into. But, there's a Pencils Down campaign in Chicago. There's a group of high school students in Providence, Rhode Island, that have sort of resisted the taking of standardized tests. And so it's a growing movement in Seattle, Washington, and so more and more parents, especially because they have ultimately a lot of power on whether they would like to have their students subjected to that assessment tool.
You have said that standardized testing has facilitated, and I quote you, an incredibly toxic environment in our schools. How is it toxic?
Okay, if you don't mind, can I just provide a little bit? I'd like to provide a framework here that drives my thinking that ultimately leads to why I made those statements, because nothing's in a vacuum. Everything is connected to a larger picture. So I need to first say that there are four driving assumptions that drive my thinking, and that is this. The first one is that education is about entering into relationships. It begins there, it ends there, and to be more concrete, I guess I should say, is that do I teach the child and establish a relationship with him and her and the family, or do I teach the subject matter? And to extend that even further with respect to school administration or policy making, do I view my work as an engagement with people and all the complexity that is involved within that, or am I more focused on inanimate concepts such as outcomes, performance, product, bottom line, scores? And this point is very important, not a question of semantics. The second point, education is a dialogical endeavor, and that meaning that in that relationship with teachers and families, the relationship is horizontal in nature and a communication pattern that always assumes another side. There's always another point of view. Third point is that education is a very, very political, very well exemplified in the state of Louisiana, but certainly in Wisconsin, I'm sure, and across the nation. And lastly, that education is not a neutral enterprise. It is an endeavor that is driven by a variety of agendas, some good and some not so good. And so when we take a look at the current climate that exists in schools by and large, in the United States as a whole, and it's really driven by a market-based type of an agenda, which some are calling neoliberal forces, which has its ultimate aim to dismantle public education. In other words, this neoliberalism possesses an ideology that propagandizes privatization, individualism, competition, and profit, all which can be summed up with an agenda that can be characterized as the marketization of education. And so finally, to finish this point, is that this marketization views education in a positivistic as a positivistic endeavor, which means that it endorses rigid standardization while at the same time dismissing the notion of developmentally appropriate practice, culturally sensitive teaching. It objectifies students and views teachers as simple functionaries. It advocates for the individual over the group, is more interested in competition than collaboration, and fosters self-centeredness over cooperation, and overall possesses no interest in the common good. And so in the end, it works to defund public education and to promote an agenda that is driven by a market-driven thinking. So that frames this drive toward this positivistic view of how we're viewing education at this point. And I think that is very, very unhealthy with what's going on in schools.
When did a movement start in this country? Was it with No Child Left Behind when we had the beginning of fairly excessive testing? And the reason for that was we were looking at how we were comparing ourselves with other countries in the world and finding, specifically in science and math, that we weren't faring all that well. So to be competitive in a global environment, we simply had to make sure that we understood those subject matters better so people could get jobs.
Well, you know, and I really appreciate the question here. And so, again, everything in context. Actually, it's important for us to understand that prior to the 1950s, on average, by the time a student graduated from high school, they probably took around three standardized tests their whole schooling career. And then if you move to 1965, even prior to third grade, it was on very rare occasions that a child would even see such a thing called a standardized test. And so if we actually move forward to this contemporary unfolding to what you're asking, it really it started with the Reagan administration with a nation at risk, moving to Bush 1 with America 2000, onto Bill Clinton with Goals 2000, and then Bush 2 with No Child Left Behind, and then, of course, now with the Obama administration with a race to the top. And what we have seen in these last 30, 35 years, an exponential increase in the use and emphasis on standardized tests, so much so now that we call them high-stakes testing, indicative of their importance. And so now, on average, by the time a student graduates from high school, they take approximately between 18 and 21 standardized tests, and schools around the country administer over 100 million of these exams annually, and that is not even to mention the practice test and the skill and drill that goes on in the schools prior to the test. And so, indeed, it's a multi-billion dollar industry. Mm-hmm. And fact, we lead all industrialized nations in the administrating of these tests. But if we look at all the international indicators of where we stand among industrial nations, we're like in the middle of the pack. But if we look at countries that are very, very successful, for an example, like Finland, there is a deep emphasis on the use and dependence of these tests.
Tell me, I have heard stories from teachers that there is so much emphasis now on testing because money is involved for certain schools. You have to perform well, or for your job, actually, that if you're not having your students perform well, you might be out of a job, that an inordinate amount of time is spent learning how to take tests to the sacrifice of some subject matter. Is that true?
It is absolutely true. As a matter of fact, the question that we have to ask ourselves, why are we giving these tests? Why are we administering tests? Well, the purpose is to assess. Teachers have to assess. And so the assumption is that particularly in the importance of that we have placed on these tests is that if a child does well or performs well, that assumes that the teacher taught well. And if the child does not do well, then that means the teacher did not do a good job. I'm simplifying it here. But ultimately, that's what it comes down to. I don't accept that assumption, nor do good teachers. So which really leads to the natural question, I think, is what is the purpose of assessment? And that's what we're really, really talking about here. What is the purpose of assessment? And there's all kinds of responses that can be given to that. But in short, the purpose of assessment is to improve teaching and learning. So then we have to ask ourselves, do standardized tests improve teaching and learning? And so teachers, yes, they are in many, many ways, they have become functionaries to teach in the certain way so that a child will pass a test. And so do they actually improve teaching and learning? Well, there's not a lot of research to really support the idea that standardized tests improve teaching and learning qualitatively. And as a matter of fact, as a lot of teachers will argue, it has rigidized teaching. It has made schools, in many cases, into sterile environments. And it has forced teachers to become simple functionaries. And what we are conveying to students, and probably most importantly and most disturbing to me and many others, is that students are learning that schooling is about passing a test and not learning to fall in love with learning. And so, so many of us, parents and teachers and educators, are speaking out regarding that.
Because the stakes are so high, James, we've heard about the widespread cheating scandal in Atlanta. Are there other places in the country where there has been significant amount of cheating?
Well, it was reported that approximately 37 states and various school districts, I couldn't actually name the districts, but 37 states that have been involved in some kind of cheating. It shouldn't be no surprise that cheating occurs. It's not because anyone condones cheating, but it's because it's an environment that we have created where schools are driven by competition. And so when you're driven by competition, you are creating a system that will inherently create winners and losers. And education is not about creating winners and losers. And so by any means necessary, whether it's in sport, history of business, and now in education, people will try to cheat. And it's not to be condoned, but the infrastructure of the system sort of facilitates that.
Mm-hmm. And let me get this right. You talked about dismantling public education. Do you believe that part of this movement for standardized testing is an attempt to dismantle public education, which brings forth a whole host of questions? Why would anybody want to do that?
Well, I would like to think that it would not be the case. Standardized tests has become so ingrained and so normalized. This is what we do. That a language change and the shift of how we think needs to be put in place. But I don't think it's a systematic that the use of standardized tests. Although there's some elements of truth to that. In the sense that the given a standardized test, they inherently gives more privilege to those who are already privileged, but I don't think it's a systematic effort. It's just it's thinking that I think that is down the wrong road.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting that in public schools we have this great emphasis on standardized tests, and we are hearing a significant number of people saying we need to go other directions with schools, more charter schools, more voucher schools, et cetera. But they don't have to do the same kind of testing, which is rather ironic, isn't it?
It is very, very ironic. Charter schools are public schools, and while they have some independence and autonomy, they still ultimately have to abide by the same state guidelines in terms of their students participating in those types of tests, whereas private schools, of course, they can do whatever they want. But you're right. The issue, again, is we're using a model of education that is positivistic in nature. It's quantitative in nature on how we evaluate what we deem as success and not success. And that's the real issue here.
We welcome phone calls for our guest, and we'll take them in just a moment. James Curlow is an education professor at Southeastern Louisiana University. He was an elementary school teacher for 18 years, and he received the honor of being Teacher of the Year in Louisiana. Here's our phone number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The question of the hour is, what do you think of standardized tests? I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hour two of our program this Wednesday, we'll be talking about comfort dogs. You've been seeing them, alas, all too frequently because of the number of horrendous experiences we've gone through as a country. Our guests, and we'll have several of them, will have a comfort dog with us as well. One of our guests, president of Lutheran Church Charities, headquartered in Addison, Illinois, Tim Hetzer, is in Texas, along with dogs, comfort dogs there. They are comforting people, family members who were associated with the horrendous fertilizer explosion. They have sent dogs to Boston and to Newtown. And we'll also speak with one of the country's few animal-assisted therapists, the founder of Health Healer, located right here in our area, a full-service dog and cat therapy organization. And I understand that Jasper will be joining us. Jasper is a dog as well. Let's go to phone calls. Standardized testing is what we're talking about this hour. Is it good? Is it bad? Why do we do it? What do we learn from it? Should we stop doing it? Jerry in Onalaska. Hi, Jerry.
Hi. Thank you. I'm a very strong supporter of public education, and I also am a very strong supporter of testing. I think it's a very important management tool. If we have certain objectives, we have to measure whether those objectives are being reached. I think one of our major problems that is brought to light with our speaker here is that we haven't really isolated the things we want to teach. The only other thing that he mentioned that was hard to isolate in tests was love of learning. I mean, if we isolate that as one of the things we want to accomplish in our teaching, then we can test for that. I think we should, because we can't spend huge sums of money doing things and we don't know whether we're getting any result. By the way, teaching is not only done in schools. Teaching is also done by parents, by churches, and so on and so on. Mm-hmm. So we can't charge the entire responsibility of bringing up a young person to the schools.
How do we test, Jerry? What you say is very interesting. How do we test whether or not we've given a student a love of learning? Jerry, I'm interested in your response, and then we'll hear James. Are you there, Jerry? All right, Jerry. I don't know what happened to Jerry. He is not there, but that's an interesting point. I would agree with him that we do need to establish a love of learning. How do we know we've done that, James?
Well, we have to understand that, yes, in education, there's not everything is measurable, and there's the qualitative nature of schooling and the quantitative nature of schooling. So there are some things that we can measure. When a child takes a math test or traditional type of test, obviously we have to have a set of standards, and things that we want our students to learn, and we have to have some valid and reliable assessment tools. The issue is not whether we need to assess or not. Of course we need to assess, but we need to assess in multiple ways, whether it's a portfolio type of way that is very, very inclusive. Now, to the question of the love of learning that you were talking about, how can you measure the appreciation of music, appreciation of art, and all of these qualitative nature of being a human being? Well, the reality is, and this is the problem, is we're trying to quantify everything that we do in schools. But when you're dealing with the human condition, obviously we can't do that. I have two children, and it's a developmental process as I watch them grow, as I watch them learn to walk, as they learn to speak, as they learn words. It's developmental that occurs through a variety of ways. If I am so hung up on the final result or they need to learn it, then I get lost in that and don't enjoy the process in that interaction of what's occurring. And so a love of learning is not something that's measurable, but it's something that is experienced.
We go to Laura next in Madison. Hi, Laura.
Oh, hi, thanks. In some way, I guess I'm going to echo what the previous caller said in that I'm not an academic. I'm just an average person who, you know, in a democracy, I have to vote for people who are going to enact policies about these kinds of things. And I'm college educated, and yet I'm utterly confused every time this subject comes up. And I hear an intelligent, you know, articulate teacher of the year, like your guest, saying, stop these standardized tests. They're evil. He says we have to have assessment, but we shouldn't have these standardized tests. And I don't understand why not. There are certain things that kids have to demonstrate. They have to demonstrate they understand math. They have to understand they can write a sentence, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Why can't those things be tested? My daughter, who admittedly I think is a smart person, she and her friends took those tests, and they said they were ridiculously easy. What's the big deal? Why is everybody, you know, objecting to these tests? So, you know, the alternative that we saw in years before was that kids in many schools were just getting passed on from grade to grade and were found to be illiterate when they were adults. How do we go with your guess system and avoid that bad previous outcome?
All right, Professor Curlow.
Okay, I appreciate the question. Well, I didn't say that these tests were evil, and these tests, and the caller is correct. We need to be able to assess. The issue that I have, and many have, is the overemphasis on them, the over-reliance on them. And we are rating schools A, B, C, D, F on them. We are rating 5 and 6 year old little boys and girls that are still developing that don't even understand what this is all about. We are passing judgment on families based on them. People are buying homes based on these scores. People are policymakers are making all kinds of decisions based on them. It's the over reliant. It is so out of control that it is indeed toxic. It disturbs me greatly when I hear policymakers talk about test scores ad nauseum, and they don't even know what they're talking about. I challenge any of them to go into these schools, to substitute teach, to spend time as the life of a teacher and see what it's like on the emphasis on them. It narrows the curriculum. It dumbs down the curriculum. And it excludes a lot of knowledge. It excludes a lot of times the arts, the sciences, the physical educations. As a matter of fact, if Albert Einstein, Isaac Newton, or even Thomas Edison's were especially attending school in the contemporary way we assess, evaluate, and judge our students, our teachers, and our schools, those three amigos would be the poster boys of what is wrong with our public schools because of their lack of performance. It has rigidized schooling environments. The issue is not against testing or assessment. It is the over-reliance on them. It is out of control. That's why you're seeing all these groups popping up all over the country. Over 100 professors in New York alone have protested them. Almost every reputable education organization have said, caution, be careful with them. And so that is the issue here.
Thanks very much for the call. Let's go to Jennifer in Madison. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi, Kathleen. I've been wondering, maybe I don't really understand what is specifically being tested for here, but when teachers say that they don't want to teach to the test, it implies to me that they're just teaching memorization of numbers and names and dates and people. Whereas it seems to me you could test and make much more sense by testing things like not the date we entered a war, but what led up to that, why did we choose to do that, what was the outcome?
Mm-hmm.
Or in reading something, not who's the protagonist, what's the name of this person, but more about what is the writer trying to get across. That's sort of a balance between quantitative and qualitative.
Yeah, those are excellent points, and it does beg the question, what is it that we're trying to learn with these tests, Professor Curlo?
Well, presumably we're trying to learn whether kids are learning or not, correct? And as a matter of fact, some kids actually do well on the test because they are teaching to the test, and so what does that assume? That whatever the school is, they're teaching that very confined knowledge, and there's nothing wrong with that in itself, but we have to remember it's at the exclusion of a lot of other knowledge. And so, indeed, they may pass the test, but they may be very limited on what they actually know. And so the question is, of course, is balance. We want to teach our students to be critical thinkers, but we can't say to a student in a class that it's maybe talking about some novels about the protagonist and plot and so forth, say, okay, we have to discuss this, but we have to get it done now. Critical think now. It doesn't work that way. In the schooling environment, it takes process. It unfolds. And so how do we balance and put that together and to make it where we're facilitating critical thinking, but at the same time have valid and reliable assessment tools? Well, the way to do that, of course, is quite complex. It's not easy. But one way we don't do it is with one singular test.
Thanks, Jennifer, for your call. Our number, if you'd like to join the conversation, we're talking this hour about standardized tests and a growing number of parents and students who are opting out of these tests and a growing number of questions among educators as to whether or not they're accomplishing what it is that we want to accomplish, which is a love of learning. Our guest this hour, James Curlo, education professor at Southeastern Louisiana University, an elementary school teacher for 18 years and teacher of the year in Louisiana as well. Let's go next to Bill in Madison. Hi, Bill.
Hello. One, something the guest said that I disagree with. At least in Wisconsin, I know of Republican politicians, particularly, who have said openly that they believe public education is socialism, and if they could, they would dismantle the public education system. They don't like the whole idea of public schools, never have, and they see the time now is ripe for dismantling that system. Now, as for the idea of standardized testing. I used to be a teacher, but when I started seeing things like school districts coming in with 3-ring binders, and they dictate to you lesson plan by lesson plan what you're going to be teaching day in and day out, never mind what the students actually need, never mind their learning process, it's teaching for a specific set of knowledge that can be easily put in a test that can be computer graded.
James.
Well, it sounds like you're saying two things at the same time, and I don't know if they're contradictory or not, but in terms of, you're correct, there are those in the political aisle that actually, admittedly, want to dismantle public education. And that same group also would like to marginalize teacher education programs. And there is that same group that even questions the relevance of teacher education program, even at being an advocate of eradicating their very existence. Why is that so? Because the notion of teacher education is not relevant. They view teaching as a simple functionary task. You just need to have a few tricks of the trade, so-called, and they would rather have people in classrooms that are what a researcher named Stokes would call as technicians, who uncritically just abide by a standardized one-size-fits-all model of doing things. And so this is also a big concern of mine and many others, of course, is the trivialization of teacher education and the emphasis on fast-track programs, which actually minimizes the complex art and science of teaching, the importance of theories of human development and the nature of learning, the nature of knowledge, the impact of the social and cultural forces on teaching and learning, critical thinking, the theory-practice connection, and the whole inherent nature, the political nature of education. Anyone that thinks being a teacher is just a few tricks of a trade, they're highly being misled. But that same group the gentleman talked about is what they think teaching is really about.
A couple emails have come in from Marilyn, who was a teacher or is a teacher, has been for 32 years. I found testing to be disruptive to the rest of the students. The sophomores in my French classes were being tested while the freshmen, juniors, and seniors could only be entertained so that the sophomores would not lose out on the lessons that had been taught during their absence. Sometimes it took over a week to give the tests, and if someone was absent, they were absent from more class time. The guest compliments you and says, don't complain about teachers unless you have taught for a while. Bill, thanks. Thanks. Do you want to respond to that?
Yeah, and I think I understood everything that was said there, and I think that was a compliment, yeah?
Yes, it was, sir. It was a compliment.
Well, I wanted to be sure that I could say, I appreciate that. And many people may understand this, but many people may not. Right now, teachers are under, public school teachers in particular, are under unprecedented attack in this country. As a matter of fact, right now, there was a research poll or a survey that was taken not long that the morale of teachers generally is at a 25-year low, and it's because of this attitude and this dismantling and the blaming of everything wrong with public education is because of our teachers. And we have some very, very, very good teachers, and we have some teachers that probably shouldn't be there. But by and large, we have some great teachers out there.
James Curlow, our guest, education professor, Southeastern Louisiana University. He taught school, elementary school teacher, for 18 years and was a good one. He was Teacher of the Year in Louisiana. Our conversation this hour is on standardized testing. Is it necessary to compete in the world, or is it creating a toxic environment in our schools? 800 1-800-486-8655 is the number. The email is talk@WPR.org. Our Facebook page, we always like to read what you have to say about our various topics on Facebook. So that is the Kathleen Dunn Show, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hour two of our program today, comfort dogs, therapy dogs, have been omnipresent the past few months at Newtown, in Boston, in Texas. We'll be talking about dogs bringing comfort and relief to people in our communities and in the aftermath of traumatic events like last week's attack in Boston and the explosion in Texas. One of our guests is with an organization that has been providing comfort in Newtown, in Boston, and also in Texas. That group is based in Addison, Illinois, Lutheran Church Charities. And we will also speak with a woman who is the founder of Health Healers, a full-service dog and cat therapy organization. I've often wished dogs could talk. We will have a dog with us who can't talk, but he will be here to provide comfort. And we'll put his picture on Facebook. Jasper will join us as well. All right, back to phone calls. Standardized tests is what we're talking about this hour. Richard and Nina is our next caller. Hi, Richard.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
I went to high school in New York State, in the 1960s. And as I recall, we took a lot of standardized tests. I just jotted a few down. I took a Regents Scholarship test, took a National Merit Scholarship test, I took the SAT, took the AP courses, but more importantly, for a lot of our classes, at the end of the year, we had the Regents exams, which were statewide exams, and in New York City, they had citywide exams for a lot of the courses. What has changed that it seemed to work pretty well then? What has changed that doesn't work so well now?
Well, yes, the emphasis on these tests, we're actually giving a lot more now. And also it's going lower and lower grades. Even in preschool, we want to test our babies. In kindergarten, we want to test them. And so it's getting lower and lower. And then the emphasis, the high-stakes nature of them. And so you did well, and that's good. A lot of people did well. But there are a lot of people that that did not do well, not on the test, and did not have the potential. It's because of the emphasis on them that did not serve them well at all.
And thank you, Richard, very much for your call. Nancy in Mequon, hi. Nancy.
Hello.
Hi, Nancy. Go ahead.
Hi.
Hi.
You know, I'm almost 65 years old. And for those of us in the arts and those of us with learning disabilities, all we would have been known for is bringing our school scores down.
Mm.
No one was going to be teaching me math. I still don't know my multiplication tables. But let me tell you, I am an excellent critical thinker, and I've made a career out of being creative. I spent 30 years producing visual art that I took around the country and sold at art fairs. I'm now a producer for public radio, an independent producer, and I transitioned at age 60 into this new career. I am an asset to society, but if I had had to been taught to the tests, I would have never made it, and all I would have done is drag my school and teachers down. And I really think this is a very big problem for those of us with learning disabilities. I haven't read one book. I've probably read 10 books cover to cover. I made it through college because they made exceptions for me to be able to start in art and theater classes immediately. I would have flunked out of college if I had to take science and math exclusively for the first 2 years, those types of classes. Teachers need to have the ability to look at an individual student and determine where their strengths are, mm-hmm. and allow them to grow and flourish in those areas without squelching them completely and making them feel stupid, inadequate, and not an asset to the school or society.
Mm, you've made some extremely important points. Professor Curlo.
Yes, very excellent point. I appreciate that. You know, there's a, I guess, a dirty little secret and that occurs all over the country. Teachers generally know who's going to do well and not do well in these tests. And kids are easily transferred. Kids are sometimes encouraged to stay home for the test because they will lower scores. It has become a system that we no longer see the child. We no longer see the human being. What we see is a potential score that will either help the school or actually make the school go low, if you will. And then it extends into labeling the school, extends into judgment of the teacher. And so teachers, administrators are trying different ways to subvert this system, either by cheating, because you can get monetary awards, or by encouraging students to be absent, or with the special ed population, they become very, very marginalized, as the caller was indicating. And so it is a system that is very, very unhealthy. And when we're talking about children, when we're talking about the nature of knowledge, when we're talking about developmentally appropriate practice, when we're talking about love of learning, children are natural learners. They are naturally curious. What is the first question that a child will usually ask and continues to ask? Why?
Why?
Why? Yeah. And as a teacher, as a parent, you have to love that. You don't have to say, why? Tell me why. You know, they'll say, why is this? Why is the moon there? Why is there fog? That is a beautiful thing. And in schools, a lot of times, that natural curiosity gets squelched.
Thank you, Nancy, very much for the call. Let's go to a Facebook post from Rachel. In addition to problems with standardized tests, there's also an issue with for-profit companies that grade standardized tests. You mentioned this, James, a little earlier. I'm close to someone who's worked scoring tests for one of these companies. Score inflation and even a level of corruption seems to be a part of the system. States and school districts put pressure on the for-profit company to deliver the results desired. As a result, the company puts pressure on those who score tests to inflate scores. Those students who are graded early on in the process might receive a very different grade than those who are graded later in the process after the goalposts have been moved. I've never heard that before. Have you heard that?
Just a little bit, but I can't say that I have in its fullness.
To be investigated, perhaps, huh?
Yeah.
Ernest in Hayward. Hi.
Hi. How can one have a love of learning when it is mandated from without? For example, in Wisconsin, we have to go to school till we're 18. How many lifelong learners might not have an awakening if they had to follow a high school senior through a regimented, standardized day and then followed a college freshman through a day that is not regimented? And not only that, but in college, you've got to pay for it. It's not free. And you're there because you want to. You know, I don't blame the teachers. I think we have to really talk about a reform of public education in a much, much more inclusive way than we are right now.
Well, I'm not sure what you're saying, Ernest. Do you think we shouldn't have mandatory schooling?
Well, if you have mandates, you're going to require standardized schooling, and there's a great diversity of viewpoints on what education is out there. So you're going to have an endless controversy. We're going to have to open up the system to more freedom and different ways of doing things. And this never comes out in discussion about public education. It's not just a market versus public. It's much bigger than that.
James.
Well, it's an interesting question. It was sort of Rousseauian. Rousseau, who the French philosopher, existential thinker, he actually stated that a child shouldn't start school until they're maybe 16 or 17, because he didn't want to have the corrupting influence of society, and that the child should learn by its natural the natural impulses. And I'm not quite sure I understand the fullness of this question, but there's standards that we do have to have. There's a certain amount of that we do have to have, but within that, we have to have a lot of flexibility to differentiate our instruction, individual needs, cultural awareness, developmentally appropriate practice, and all that sort of thing.
Thanks, Ernest. Carl in Madison, hi.
Yes, hello. I think it's an interesting conversation, and I like the way it has turned recently. I am a former kindergarten teacher. I taught kindergarten in public school for 11 years and then received a PhD in curriculum and instruction here at UW-Madison, and this issue is very dear to my heart. In the days when I was coming up and learning to teach, the relationship between the child and the teacher was paramount. There was a really rich dialogue back and forth, and this child brought this in, and then that created kind of an enthusiasm in the class, and can we talk about that? And that became an active part of the curriculum for the day. And the child felt like they brought something to school, that the relationship went both ways, and that thirst for learning and that eagerness to explore was easy to fan and support because children bring it naturally to school. But then when some folks decided that we need to make things more rigorous and more standardized, and particularly we need to control public school teachers and control the process that's going on in the classroom, they realized that their mandates and expectations from without didn't have much sway with teachers who knew better, who knew the power and the intimacy of that relationship. And so they devised standardized testing that can slide right under the doors that the teachers used to close and test for things like, do you know, this tributary or do you know this date? Well, it may be powerful to know that date or that tributary, but it may have nothing to do with a conversation going on in that classroom or that organic dance back and forth between the student and the teacher and the larger group to, create a really rich, question-oriented atmosphere. It's something that now has to get shunted to after we finish these tests, after we've completed all of the state mandates, after this. And so the child learns that the test is more important than their voice. The child learns that the test is more important even than the teacher's perspective, that it's something that has to be tackled and addressed before we can get to the good stuff, which is curiosity and play and interaction and a love of learning. And somebody earlier had said, we need to test for a love of learning. Well, my gosh, one way you can kill it out of a person is to over-test for it. It's apparent when you see it in a child's eyes, and children taking standardized tests seldom look as though they are engaged and enjoying what they're doing, and that's because they're not.
Thank you so much for your call, Carl. Professor Curlo.
Very good remarks. Exactly correct as far as I'm concerned. Very good. I appreciate that.
I appreciate your call too, Carl. As a board member, this is an email for an Illinois school district. We need some sort of measurement to see how our district is performing. The problem our district runs into is that it's over 50% non-English speaking, and standardized tests are given in English. You can imagine the results and the public outcry over our scores. We as a board and district are struggling to find an adequate system of measurement that can accurately assess our students. All districts are not equal.
Well, I think, right, and so the question that is, what's driving the conversation is, how are these students going to do on the test? And that's the problem. The better question is, how can we better serve these students to learn? And again, it's not semantics. It's driven by, we've got to get these scores, they've got to, and as opposed to, We've got to make sure that these students learn, and we're talking about English language learners. We're talking about programs that would be appropriate for them.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Now let's do 30 seconds. Can you do it, Michael in Oconomowoc? We're almost out of time.
All right. I was a sophomore in high school in 2005, which would have been the heyday of No Child Left Behind. And one thing I really remember is they told us before we took the test, this does not matter to you at all. So just to reiterate what I think your guest is saying, what a lot of the callers have said, these tests are not to test the students. They're just to test the schools.
Thank you so much, Michael, for the call. Well, what an interesting hour this has been, Professor James Curlo. Thank you so much for getting us thinking.
Thank you for your time. I really appreciate it. It's my privilege.
Professor James Curlow, our guest, the first hour of the program today. He is an education professor at Southeastern Louisiana University. He taught elementary school for 18 years. He was Teacher of the Year in Louisiana, and he grew up in Italy. So we never got to that international testing. We'll do that. This show prompted so many other shows. We'll get to them. Thanks to Rob Ferret, and thanks to Katie Mattson, and thanks to Rhonda Fanning, and thanks to all of you for listening, everybody. Please stay tuned. We're going to be talking about comfort dogs. We have a dog joining us. I'm so happy. I can't wait. News will be ahead.